We've got our councillor Lisa Thompson in the studio. Morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Aaron. Kia ora, everyone.
Probably the biggest one is that council's just given up on trying to get the long-term plan done this year with changes at government.
The uncertainty. So we've council agreed that we would defer, and you know, I've mentioned this often in our corridor, our long-term plan. By a year, actually.
You were thinking about, you were about to go to a meeting last time I spoke to you.
Yeah,
to discuss
consider
it.
Yeah. What our next steps are, given the uncertainty. So instead of going into the long-term plan, which is the first 3 years of the next 10 years planning.
It's a serious serious review of the
yeah,
budget, isn't it?
On the budget and yeah, the works that are scheduled for the first 3 years of the 10-year plan. So instead we've opted to do an enhanced annual plan for the 24-25 financial year. We did this because...
Hold on, we should say that in between, every 3 years they update the long-term plan, but in the years in between they do a thing called annual plan.
We do an annual plan.
Which is a little revision?
A little revision.
Yeah.
And so we decided, because of the uncertainties, that it would be best for us to do an annual plan, and we're able to do that.
The government's
providing
legislation for
that. Yeah, we can actually do that, and we didn't do that lightly. You know, we did that, obviously, with consultation with our staff, but also with the...
I had read a report from the council staff saying that the other options were to not do all the consultation, and that the government was going to provide legal cover for that.
And that we legitimately can do this. So that gives us more time to address immediate challenges in the district, particularly around our water infrastructure and our Waka Kotahi funding, and also our affordability, because, you know, our ratepayers, well, it's not just our ratepayers, because everyone in our communities that live in the Waikato district, you know, are facing those affordability challenges.
Well, if you pay rent, you're paying for the...
That's exactly right.
For the rates.
For the rates as well.
Yeah, if the landlord's sensible, they covered that.
Yeah. And then we also wouldn't have our rates evaluation, so the QV evaluations for houses, properties within the district as well. So there's so many uncertainties.
Was that delayed, or is that just...
That's being delayed as well.
Why was that being delayed?
I suppose
this must be somebody knows somewhere. Is
it's just taking longer. There are more challenges. So there's a whole lot of uncertainties around being able to forecast the first 3 years of the LTP. So we felt that it would be much better to go out with the annual plan for 2024-25.
So that's tweaks to the existing plan. Although the existing plan didn't really account for what was going to happen this next financial year, did it?
No, and there's so many uncertainties. And with our revaluation process, the property revaluation is currently underway with QV, and it's expected that that data would be available by the 8th of May this year. But unfortunately, you know, the timing isn't great for our communities.
You can't go to the community and say, here's what your rates will be.
Yeah, and because...
And we'll, time for consultation.
Yeah, and well, we'll already be consulting on the annual plan based on our current property values. So there's so many things that are up in the air that make it really challenging for us and council, because we don't want to go out with an LTP with rates or forecasts that are incorrect because of the uncertainties around our waters infrastructure, around the re-evaluations, around our Waka Kotahi funding.
Well, so the government's only just made its roading policy statement in the last week or so, hasn't it?
Yeah, the last few days.
Is that really late? Like that's
really late.
That's 5 months after they were elected.
Yeah.
Why didn't they? Shouldn't they? I don't know the answer to this question, but shouldn't they have that ready to go when they're elected? I don't know.
I'm looking at you blankly.
You're not in the government either.
Yeah,
you're in local government.
Yeah. obviously there's challenges with their budgeting. You know, so we anticipate that the official funding confirmation from Waka Kotahi will be in September this year. So obviously that's way too late for us to go out with LTP. So again, that's why we're doing the annual plan. And this funding from Waka Kotahi is really critical for councils across the country, because typically it covers about a third of councils' total budget.
Total roading budget.
With, yeah, the roading, well, our whole budgeting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, because it's a third of it, because that's a huge chunk of the work that we do in the roading and the transport.
So our rates would have to go up by half to cover that if all of a sudden we didn't have the government funding. Just to put it in perspective.
Yeah, so it would be really challenging. It typically, it covers about a third of council's total budget, with 51% of it subsidised by Waka Kotahi. So this significantly impacts our roading program projects and overall budgeting planning. So you can imagine trying to do a budget when we don't know what that subsidy will be from Waka Kotahi.
Yeah, the government's made its policy statement. Now Waka Kotahi has to put its budget together, and then you get the budget. Is that how it's working? Because the government policy statement is just a statement of intent, not the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, and so focusing what that expenditure for roading will be. Where will they put that? And, you know, they've got the roads of significance, the potholes, and how that translates into local government and what that subsidy looks like, we don't know. So we haven't had an indication of what that subsidy will be, even with that statement from central government. So
it's just broad brush strokes.
That's another real uncertainty for our budget forecasting. So who knows what that will look like, but we should know sooner rather than later.
Yeah, but not soon enough.
Not soon enough, that's exactly right. Hence, again, why we're going out with an annual plan.
And the other thing that's come
And it also, going out with an annual plan, it gives us another 12 months to get better certainty around our long-term plan and about the government's next steps regarding, you know, their initiatives like Local Water's Done Well. And we can align our...
So that's what they're calling the legislation that hasn't yet come through the House.
Yeah, the...
For Three Waters.
Yeah, for the three waters.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, what that looks like in terms of that funding support from central government to local government, what does that look like?
But apparently we do know a little bit about it, because Watercare has announced that they're going to leave the district council contract. They're going to stop looking after the three waters in our district council. They've made that decision based on government policies that they expect to come through?
Well, they've made that decision in the best interests of Watercare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there must be changes coming through that will make it pointless working down here to them.
With the new legislation from central government, they feel that they're best placed to be based in Auckland. So we're still in a contract with Watercare until 2026.
So a couple of years.
Yep. So, you know, we will have to undertake a review of any services that they are delivering under this contract, you know, and that significantly impacts the future planning for us as a council. But it doesn't impact on the work that's been undertaken through Watercare and our council partnership. For example, our Raglan wastewater upgrade that's being undertaken as we speak, that's still on track.
Well, that's a contract that's been let to a company, so they're just off building now, aren't they?
So our potential options for our water service delivery after June 2026, because that's when the contract will cease, you know, we're looking at possibility of in-house delivery, you know, the services delivered by a council-controlled organisation, whether wholly or partly owned by council, delivery by another local authority or another person or agency. You know, so there's a whole number of things
basically
to consider. And, you know, we were in this position prior to 2016, before, you know, council really started looking at what a... the water, three waters provision would be, you know, when we were in discussions with Waipa and Hamilton. And obviously we decided to continue on the sort of transformation of provision of our three waters. And
which
that's
means
why we went into
employing a private company with a lot more resources in terms of their knowledge.
Well, they had the centre of excellence, really. You know, their expertise of three waters provision.
Yeah, and they've got
and
so they've got a lot
got
of
all of that
like, I think,
expertise, and
I think for people to understand, like in council, there would have been a handful of experts.
We've got a waters team now in council,
but it's a small number of people.
It's
whereas
small,
Watercare's got this huge resource
got,
of people who've spent their careers and expertise,
and
yeah,
contractors that they can access because their business is three waters provision. So they're experts at that business.
And aside from what happened in October last year with those mistakes about our treated wastewater going on the incoming tide, they had, most people had thought they were doing a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now the other issue, because of course the thing that people, we need to keep reminding people, the original, all the uproar that happened around Three Waters and co-governance was actually a sideshow from the fact that the government at that time had decided they needed to do something because the governments couldn't face, the local government, the councils, couldn't face the financial load.
The financial burden.
The burden of doing Three Waters. But where are we at with that now with this new government? Have they just put it all back on council? Is there going to be some way, or councils, or is there going to be some way of getting help? Like, I don't know how some of the councils could even raise the money.
That's exactly right, and those discussions are ongoing.
Okay, so there's no answer to that yet.
No, there's no answer to that yet. And ultimately, at the end of the day, central government, in a perfect world, you know, would support councils in terms of their funding because we can't afford it through the rating system because the costs are enormous. You know, for Raglan alone, if we look at the cost of the upgrade of our wastewater treatment plant, you know, that's $26 million worth of work. And then if we're looking at the option of land-based treatment, you know, the land-based disposal, that's another huge burden on the targeted ratepayers. So when, for example, those who are on the reticulated system, they're the ones that pay for it.
Mm.
And so
did you have did you do the visit to
Kaupata? No, because I actually had another hui that came up at short notice, so I didn't actually go to the tour.
Did Angeline Greensill?
No, because there was a tangi at Puihakina.
Lots of people were invited, but people couldn't go. Where I was going with this was that with this new treatment system that's been constructed at the moment, just starting.
No, it's been constructed. It's actually working now. So previously...
No, here in Raglan.
Oh, in Raglan, sorry.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
with our one coming
Te Kauwhata.
Yeah, the water quality. You've talked several times about how the one at Meremere, which you've seen, which is the exact same thing that was going to be here, you can wash your hands in the water that comes out.
Yeah, yep. And it's not exactly the same because we've got different challenges. So, you know, the systems that are put in place...
Is the output the same?
The output's the same, that's right.
Because it's meeting a certain standard of water quality.
Yeah, and also because each wastewater treatment plant has their own challenges and their own uniqueness, depending on where they are.
And what comes in to the plant.
What comes in, but also here we've got things like sand. We've got, you know, I was talking to the guy when we went to Meremere, and I said, oh, is this what we might be getting in Raglan? He said, it's probably like this, but, you know, Raglan's different in its topography and there are other challenges. So they, I guess it's a bespoke way of finding solutions for our wastewater.
So then the question is, if the water comes out that clean and can reliably come out that clean, are we still bothered about it going into the harbour?
These are discussions that we need to have with the community because at the end of the day, what it will come down to as well is the affordability.
Are we bothered if it costs a lot? I think that's...
Yeah, and there will be significant implications on rates in terms of just the provision of our three waters, because we're not just talking about the upgrades or the discharge, but also the resource consent for discharges, the cost to that, the ongoing nature of the, the plant, the upkeep, all of those sorts of things. It is going to be unaffordable for our ratepayers, particularly if we don't have intervention from central government as well.
Mm. I had thought
we're talking about thousands of dollars.
Millions.
We're not just talking.
Millions.
Thousands of dollars. Thousands of dollars
per ratepayer. Oh, right. Okay.
For three waters provision, we're talking thousands of dollars. We are talking, I think it's $1,500 to $2,000 for the targeted rate for our wastewater, the provision of our wastewater, our three waters provision, sorry. We could be looking at $5,000, $7,000 and rates for that one component. So they're not insignificant. This is not insignificant impact on our ratepayers or our communities, because as you pointed out before, it's not just our ratepayers, it's everyone within our communities and around affordability. So we need other support, and that needs to come from central government.
I'm wondering, and this is probably not a question you can answer, but I'm just wondering, does it make much difference if it was paid for out of rates or taxes? And we feel it when it comes out of rates, because we noticed the rates just went up by a huge proportion. But and if it comes from central government, it can be all goes in the wash with all the other costs and can be balanced out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I say, that's not one for us to answer right now. I need to find someone who knows about. No one knows what the government's going to do next.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's so many uncertainties.
We can't have that discussion yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, we've talked about those things. I just want to keep talking about a structure plan. You and I talked about this off the air. Was it yesterday I saw you? I've learned that the development on the Koning Farm, they have to put in a structure plan for that development. It's going to be like 400 houses approximately. They've submitted that to council, and Raglan Land Company, which owns the Rangatahi development, is objecting to some parts of it because they've got ideas about where the
road should come out.
A bypass road around Raglan should go through. Now, ignoring the fact that that would cost megabucks, one day they say there's going to be 12,000 people living here, so we'll have to have one. It doesn't seem right. No, I don't object to the developers doing what they're doing. They're going to do what they do. But shouldn't the community be deciding where their bypass road goes, not private developers who are trying to do their thing? Yes.
In a perfect world, yes. And if we can look at where that would come out and where we, have the mechanisms in council or the land that we can utilise for that to come out and where...
I guess if you don't own the land, it's a bit hard to actually dictate, is it? If council doesn't own the land, you can't say a road's going to go here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It makes it more difficult.
Ken, this is an interesting question. I know that there's the Public Works Act, and the government can buy land for motorways and things like that.
I think you need to get someone from staff, actually.
I'm thinking out loud here, I know.
You're thinking out loud, and I think the details would be probably... best place to actually, if I came in with one of our staff, to actually talk that through, that process, and what that looks like and what the requirements are, because we've got the district plan, that determines where development goes. And so I think it would be really great if I came in my next interview with one of our staff members, and actually talk to what you've just raised about the development, what determines where a road comes out, and the developer driven as opposed to the community. So yeah. I think that would be really good to have that in our next interview.
We might have a look at that. One thing I do want to talk about though is that I know there's competition amongst all the communities in the district for each community to get its structure plan and that kind of planning done, and that you're only one councillor for our area, and you have to. You're voting against 13 others or 12 others, something like that. does it help you if the community is saying, not just to you, but to other parts of council, hey, we want, where's our structure plan?
Or where's our overall plan for, even if we don't term it as a structure plan?
Some kind of
I know
plan.
That definitely, and you know, Dennis from the community board is very passionate about that, so too is Chris. So the community board is advocating for better planning around where development should happen. And certainly if the community is interested in that, I think that they should come to the community board meetings and express some of their views on that, because I think that would be really supportive for the position of the community board as well. So I think that's probably, rather than piecemeal people going as individuals, they should actually come to our community board hui and say, do you need support with this? How do we go about advocating for this?
I was just wondering if we need to not bypass you and the community board, but...
No, I think there's strength in collaboration and planning.
Yeah. But also, like, you guys can go to the council and say, well, hey, we've got a community telling us we need this. But if they hear it from us more directly at the council, as well as you guys hearing it, because I just know that for people who don't know in the council how it works, there's all these councils and they've all got their areas and everyone's horse trading is going on.
There's a lot of collaboration, actually, I have to say, with the councillors.
But there has to be some horse trading as well going on, just because that's how it's going to
well,
be.
Well, it's resourcing as well, because you can't, you know, so having a structure plan for any community actually has to be built into the LTP as well, you know, in terms of funding that.
Yeah.
So, for example, you know, I'm talking to people who would like their road sealed, or they'd like a safety crossing on the main road, but we don't just have the budgets to pull those things out. They have to be put into our LTP. So too does the something like a structure plan or some planning around Raglan, you know. And if
I had heard, we were down the as the LTP was being formed, we were kind of a little bit further down the pecking order than I would have liked for some kind of plan to be done for Raglan. And I know that making noise and squeaky wheel and all that helps.
Yeah, but it needs to be cohesive and collaborative as well. So we are singing from the same song sheet of what we are actually wanting.
Yeah.
So it's quite strategic as opposed to some idea of, I want a structure plan. What does that look like? What do we want in that? You know, how do we do that? And I think that if we have a more collaborative approach rather than a piecemeal one with an idea of what it is that we want, then I think that's way more powerful than people just individually going, we want a structure plan. Okay, so what is that? What are the aims and objectives of that? So I think I really encourage people to engage with the community board.
Yes, right. And yep. Yeah, I get it now.
Because it is, I mean, anyone can advocate or ask for or request for something, but there's real power in a collaborative voice that's cohesive. It's more thought out than just asking for a thing. What is that thing? A structure plan.
Yeah, you need
where
to
would
have
we
an
like
argument.
To see? Where would we like to see development? Where would we like to see commercial development happening?
Actually,
you know,
I've had a little experience that can give an explanation of how this works in council, because I was looking through a council document the other day and I saw a submission I made in 2017 about something. And at the end they said, we're not doing this because the submitter provided no evidence. And I was like, I provided evidence. And then I realized what the commissioners mean by evidence is this is a government policy, or this is a council policy, or this is a regulation that says that this is important. So
it's actually really hard for people to submit.
You need to be
submit.
A planner, eh?
You actually need to do that, because you remember when we were for Whangaroa Raglan Affordability Project, when we were submitting around affordability, you know, we didn't have the necessary skills to submit to that in a way that a planner would or a consultant would, who actually knows how to put that language into the language of that submission, what they need to hear. It makes it really challenging and difficult just for lay people who know that there is something happening in your community, affordability, the lack of affordable housing, where can we put housing, where can we enable it? And if we don't understand that language or the process, it makes it really difficult to be heard.
And you just, and you don't get taken seriously. And I mean, I have years of experience dealing with councils also in my work career before I was doing this. And I still didn't do it anywhere near the standard required for them to take me seriously. I mean, that's really what it is. I think there's a little bit of, not snobbery, but it's. I'm talking, you know, commissioners come in from outside the council. It's not even councillors.
They work to the law, I suppose. They work to what they have in front of them, and what's detailed. So it's very legislatively geared, you know, and it's geared for if it's the district plan, and it's geared, so you need to know all of that in order to make a submission. It makes it difficult.
You know how there's community lawyers or lawyers, what do they call those lawyers where if you can't afford a lawyer, you get a lawyer?
Legal aid.
We need planning aid.
Yeah, we need planning aid.
Because
there was a gentleman that actually was helping with that, and he was an ex-planner. He helped us, and that was really great. But still, and we had some really switched-on people working with us. Fiona McNabb.
Oh, I know. It upsets me a little, especially when the Rangatahi thing was going through. This was before you were councillor, when Clint was councillor. And from what I understand, all the evidence submitted against it was ignored because it wasn't submitted by experts. And I thought that was a cop-out by the commissioners at the time. I don't know enough about it to really be commentating whether it was.
I don't know. I'm not familiar.
The way I heard it, that sounded pretty bad. And this is not an objection to what Rangatahi did, just the process. I think that's the thing that concerns me, is that the community is not getting enough say in the process. And God knows this community likes to have a say.
Which is great, isn't it?
Yeah. So this discussion's gone on for a very long time. And you probably have stuff to go to.
Yes, I do. And I just, we spoke about the harbour leasehold.
Talked about that off the air, yes.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get some clarity around that area. So, you know, that where Wineta Street is, and the area in there between Wainui Road and Wineta Street is what we call Harbour Board leaseland.
So that's,
and they're leases in perpetuity.
So it's the corner where Wild is.
Yeah, from Wild down
back into the police station.
Into backpackers. The police station and around that area there was, questions around the lease for one of the shops that have now closed, and some of the talk that it's council has a responsibility around affordability of those on leases or rentals. We don't have a mechanism to do that, so those leases are leases in perpetuity, and that means that they last for a certain period of time.
So just to explain to people, the council leases that land to a landlord, someone who is effectively a landlord, and they've been leasing their shops out to individual business owners.
Yeah.
So that's the context for this lease.
The leases in perpetuity are commercial leases, so we lease them under commercial rates, but the leases in perpetuity mean that once the lease expires, the tenant has the right of renewal on the same terms and conditions as the original lease. And it's at that time, I believe, that we can raise the lease
the value
at that time, and the building owner can renew the lease as many times as they want.
What determines the amount that the
well, it's a commercial lease. So whatever the ground lease is determined by the commercial value of that land lease.
So it's market rates, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah, the commercial, yeah.
And you can't do anything else than that. You can't say that one of our legislative requirements is to look after community well-being, and so we're going to go in slightly below market rates to help people out. Is that...
You mean in terms of if the person has the lease... We can't determine what they rent.
No, I know. Yeah, yeah, right. Because they're one step removed. The person who runs the business or the shop.
Yeah, the person who has the lease determines that we don't influence how much they then rent that premises out to.
You're one step removed, but if for argument's sake the council didn't put the lease up at all during the time of renewal, then theoretically the landlord wouldn't have to put their rent up for the business owner.
Theoretically.
Yeah, and this is very theoretical.
Yeah, but it doesn't work like that.
You just have to go with market rates determined by a valuer?
The commercial leases are determined by that, and that because that lease comes back to the community. So the ground lease
is a responsibility both ways.
The ground lease comes back and is ring fenced for the harbour board area. So the things like the walk bridge, the upgrade that we've had under between the walk bridge and the jetty, the strengthening of the piles under the wharf, those all come from the harbour board lease monies, which is ring fenced. To that work, so that those ground leases are utilised for work around the harbour.
Yeah, and that's what it legislated for.
Yeah, that's what it's ring fenced for, because it's the harbour board endowed properties.
Okay, all right.
And they're leases in perpetuity on Māori land, is another matter.
That is another matter. Ultimately, the problem is that our property prices are just continuing to go up super fast all around the country, and here we are. Okay, all right, that clears up a reasonable amount. We're not in an ideal situation, but that's where we are. And of course the landlord who has the lease and leases and then rents the space, they of course can charge whatever they like on top.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, and we don't know, without seeing all the figures together, you don't know what they're doing, whether they actually are ripping off the tenants or not. We don't know.
Yeah
People feel like they are, but that's a feeling on Facebook.
Yeah, and you know, just really want to acknowledge SWAP.
Mm.
You know, they'll be missed.
Yeah. Okay. What time do you have to go? Like 3 minutes?
Yes.
Two minutes. Is there anything else we want to mention? Like, there's other ongoing stuff, but what's.
There's lots of stuff going on, but just want to remind people that our treaty exhibition opens at the Raglan Old Art School on Tuesday. So that will be open 10 till 2, Mondays to Saturdays. So please pop down.
What's in it?
It's actually what you saw at our Waitangi Day event. We'll have our Kotahi Tanga Akorawai. There'll be information about the signatories who signed locally. There'll be our timeline. So there's lots of information in that exhibition. And we've got 65 students from Pukitaha School coming in on the 13th.
All right.
With 25 parents. So we're taking them through the exhibition in a short film. And we've got Raglan area school students coming in on another day. So we just really encourage the community to come in, because there's lots to learn.
What's the short film?
The short film is just New Zealand histories on YouTube.
Okay, it's not
YouTube.
The footage that was shot in the studio weeks ago.
No, that's not ready yet.
Didn't think it was, but I
will be hopefully ready for Matariki.
When's that? July? July?
July 20, June 28th.
June, right.
Is the official Matariki
nearly July
holiday.
It's one of those ones like Easter that's going to move around a bit.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, okay. All right, Lisa, that's it.
Thank you.
That's enough for now. Thank you for coming in. See you again in a couple of weeks. All right, folks, what are we going to do? I'm going to play that Spoon song, and we'll have a break in a moment.